Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, hello, raw feeders. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Well, what is today? Today is fan-freaking-tabulous Friday with Dr. Judy Jasek. How are you this week, Dr. Jasek?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm a little warm. I don't really like the hot weather too much, but doing good. Keep moving forward and trying to do the best we can, though. As we were talking about, it gets harder and harder with some of the crazy stories we hear out there.
Nutty. But I want to say this about hot weather. I got a text from my mom who said Oklahoma and where they are is like 103, 102. It's like 100 all week there.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we don't have it quite that bad.
So I just did a podcast last night. I'm like, listen, you know, I was using our friend Dr. Andy Harper's information on the pause. And she was saying, you know, hey, you better check the heat of the pavement.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been out to these really, really, obviously I was born in Oklahoma, but people just, they're like, oh, it doesn't hurt my dog's feet. Their paws. I'm like, yeah.
Oh gosh, I've seen so many blistered paws over, I mean, not just recently, but over the years. You know, people take their pets out on the trail, rocks out hiking too. We'll do that. And yeah, that pavement, I mean, take your shoes off and feel how hot it is and then make your pet walk on it. You know, like,
yeah,
people wonder why their pets, like, maybe sometimes don't want to go for a walk. Well, yeah, maybe the pavement's too freaking hot.
Right. Put some shoes on them, for Pete's sakes. We've got a lot of people listening to our podcast, Dr. Jasek. This one is from Emily. Emily says, I've been listening to your podcast and I'm obsessed. I just put my dog Mocha, who's a Great Dane, on the raw diet, and I see a difference already. My concern is what treats to get her. I feel like since she's on the raw diet, she should be eating certain treats. I've gotten her beef bone marrow to chew on as a treat and she loves it, but I don't know what else to get. Any suggestions? Well, yeah, Emily, take a look at all of our treats in our treat section. You know, what you're going to look for in treats is single ingredients, right?
No greenies.
Oh
no,
my
greenies.
Gosh.
Please, nothing that's molded, that's green, molded into the shape of a toothbrush. Don't feed those.
Or a dog's paw or whatever else that they make out there. And don't be confused by the word organic. Just because it's organic does not mean it's good for your dog, okay? But I would say, Emily, any of our treats, we got beef heart, we've got bison tripe, we've got tendons, lamb lung, beef lung, all of those are great treats, as are duck heads, duck feet, turkey necks, real food. Right? Real food.
Yeah. Any animal parts, pretty much.
Yeah. So thank you, Emily. We love it that you are listening to the podcast. Also from Jessica, this is funny. She says, I love listening to the podcast. I tune in almost every day or binge listen when I fall behind. And I'm so happy to have found you guys. Tell Dee Dee I'm a real sphincter for not stocking up on raw and letting this happen. So that is from Jessica, which is funny. I got that from our customer service because there was a mix up on her date for shipping. So you guys, here's how you want to check that. When you put your order in, make sure that you take a look at your confirmation email. Make sure that your pickup date and place is what you want. If it's not, call us. We'll get it changed for you. But I thought that was funny. I don't think I'm saying that word enough, Dr. Jasek.
Sphincter.
I don't think I am. I'm going to have to up my sphincter consumption of words.
You know, I've gotten addicted to your like home delivery. That's pretty sweet. You
know, I see that.
Because then I don't have to remember, let's see, which week is it? And well, let's see, we got this much and, you know, are we going to make it till then? And like, it's so easy. Go in and order. And it's usually the next day or 2 days, you know, depending on what day of the week I order it. and it just shows up, put it right in the freezer, done. It's so nice.
Boom. Yeah. Just that. So I know. Nice. 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 Okay. So here is another question that came in from Anita. And Anita says this: I do think y'all should give advice to your clients about what to do in a grid down situation. If we have some sort of lockdown or meat shortage, it will potentially mean many dogs starving to death. Our world and country are extremely fragile right now, and so is our food and gas systems. Amen.
Wow, sister. This is a very aware person. I'm impressed.
Yeah, it is a real possibility that my family and I are preparing for, and I hope for the best and prepare for the worst. I do have two freezers, but they are full right now and will not last if we have a power failure. Well, Anita, here is what some of our very aware pet parents are doing. They're buying the freeze-dry, the machines to dehydrate their food, right? And they're expensive, I will say, Dr. Jason Kavalu. The large ones are about $3,500. The small ones are about $2,500. You know, you can do about 10 pounds a day, maybe 20 pounds a day with a large one. But we do have several of our customers who are buying our food and they're putting those in the machines, freeze drying them. It takes about 26 hours to do. And then storing that.
And that works okay, huh? I guess there's no reason I wouldn't.
And I've seen the pictures. They're beautiful. And all you do is rehydrate it. You would rehydrate it, put water in it at a later time. But super easy to store. Okay. But again, that's going to be something that it depends on how many dogs you have. Like if your dog, I mean, you could do it in no time. Right. But if you have big dogs, you want to start getting prepared. Now, people ask me all the time, what suggestions do I have for freeze dried food and kibble? I don't. I don't really have any. I do know, Dr. Jasek, I looked at it for, okay, if you have a dog that needs about, or two dogs like we do, 90 pounds a month, okay? So I was looking at, there were several different, you know, freeze-dried, you know, whether it was Grandma Lucy's, whether it was, I don't know all those brands because I haven't fed that type of food in umpteen million years. But we did do a little price analysis, and for 6 months worth of food for the freeze dried for both of our dogs, it was going to be about $2,500.
Yeah. Yeah. They're expensive options that, you know, and you think we actually have a freeze dryer. We got one, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago or so. We haven't used it for dog food, but you know, we've been freeze drying some, you know, some human food, and it's pretty cool. I mean, they are pricey. I think we paid about $3,000 for it. But if you think about how expensive freeze dried human and dog food is, I think it would pay for itself, especially if you get to the point where we can't get food. You know, it would be a worthwhile, you know, when you think about, I mean, like we think about here, my husband and I, like, well, what's a worthwhile investment? You think about what's a worthwhile investment? Well, you know, stock market's scary. What do you do to, you know, invest? What's a good thing to invest in? Like, well, being able to eat, probably a worthwhile investment. So, you know, you take some money and you put it that direction, but then the thing's probably going to last forever. And like, we like to go backpacking and stuff. And that was one of our reasons. Like, you know, you buy these dehydrated prepared meals and they just got so much garbage in them, you know?
Yeah.
I really, you know, we eat them because you want something that's lightweight to carry and that you can just reconstitute. But, you know, I've thought for a long time, God, wouldn't it be cool if we just take the food that we'd love to eat at home and dry it. And it's pretty slick, you know, works pretty well. I hadn't thought about just throwing the raw food in there, but that's a good idea.
Yeah. One of our customers that we've had for a very long time, she's been doing this for over a year now. And they have, I believe, Ridgebacks. So they have large dogs. But what she's doing is getting that prepared. Because you're right, Anita. I mean, the power can go down, right? And then all of that money that you spent on frozen food. Now, I would diversify, right? I'm going to have some frozen and I'm going to have some reconstituted food. And I'm also going to hunt, right?
Yeah.
So I am going to do that as well. But then you have to know, all right, if you were to hunt, do you have what it takes to make sure that that meat that you're hunting is in a safe place for, you know, so it doesn't go bad. Right. So you've got to think of all those different things. But certainly we know out in the world that Gates and, you know, Soros and that group, they are trying to take down the food supply system. The nitrogen issue right now, that is a planned, famine where they're stopping the nitrogen production that you need for all these crops. And then what you keep backing up the food chain, right? So what are your cows going to eat? What are your chickens going to eat? What are your pigs going to eat? You know, this type of thing.
And then they're creating diseases, you know, because I don't know if this bird flu was really slaughtered all these chickens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to kill them. You know, another thing I wanted to mention on the preparedness thing, we got it for our camper. We have like a little small solar panel, but you can get a small solar panel probably for a couple $100 or something. And if your power did go out, you could use that to run your freezer because, you know, frozen food isn't just going to last a couple of days in the freezer and it's all going to go bad. But if you had something like that as a backup, here in Colorado, we get so much sun that could actually keep your freezer running for a while.
Right. Right. So these are things that you've got to think about, right? All right. So we are going to answer a question from Maeve today, Dr. Jasek. And this is, we'll peel the onion back on this one, but here is the question that came in. Maeve says, my dog has had elevated ALT counts for the past 2 years. Everything else is normal for him. So my vet wants to try eliminating as much copper from his diet as possible. Both foods I have him on right now, unfortunately, include copper on their ingredient list and have foods high in copper in the kibble too. So when we got this, the question was this, okay, how did the vet actually come to the decision that they needed to take out the copper? And what were and what are the ALT levels? So the answer was the ALTs were slightly elevated in 2020. And the only reason that she knew that the ALTs were elevated was because he was going in for pre-dental blood work and he had to get a tooth removed because he broke it chewing on a marrow bone. So the levels in January 2022 were 267. Now, just for references for our listeners, typically the ALT, they say in the normal levels, about 57. All right. We've talked about one level going up, but so his levels were 267. Then they put him on an antibiotic, Dr. Jasek, and it brought the levels to a 150 range. And then he was tested about 3 to 4 weeks ago from January, and his ALT was at 500. Only from that, Dr. Jasek, there is no other symptom at all. She says the dog is absolutely perfectly acting fine. The vet is diagnosing this dog with copper storage
hepatopathy.
Thank you. Hepatopathy.
Yeah.
or heptic microvascular dysplasia. And this vet, she said he does approve our food, but they want to eliminate as much copper from his diet as possible before they do another round of blood work to see if that improves his ALT levels. Now, the question was asked, what test and values did your vet do that suggested a copper issue? Was there a mineral test? No. Was there a liver biopsy? No. The next question that was asked by our team is, what supplements is this pet on, and has this pet been on these supplements throughout these tests? Supplements are Cosequin, probiotic miracle that you get off of chewy.com, milk thistle, salmon oil, and dehydrated goat's milk from Honest Kitchen. Okay. What pharmaceuticals? This dog has had all puppy shots, including a lepto, including rabies, including Bordetella. And he is also on Simparica Trio. Hmm. Did the vet look at supplements? Did the vet look at current food or water or suggest coming off any of the current supplements? And the answer was no.
Yeah, because there's nothing there that would raise the ALT.
I mean, I'm just like,
she says tongue in cheek.
Right, right. And so does your vet know that in the raw diet, there's going to be copper because there are organs? And the thing about it is that, you know, there's so many reasons why your dog should have copper in the diet. You don't want to micromanage it, right? But if you really look at the symptoms, Dr. Jasek, of copper hepatopathy, did I say that right?
Yeah, I think you did.
Wow.
Good work.
Thank you. I mean, I'm looking at all of these things like pale gum, seizures, vomiting, you know, excessive urination, jaundice, enlarged liver, distended abdomen, disorientation. I mean, the list goes on. Dark urine, coma, of course. I mean, something would be wrong if your dog was in a coma. But I mean, there's none of this is showing up. So how do we jump from, okay, we have an elevated just a 500 and the ALT to your dog needs to get rid of all copper in his diet?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. As far as I know, the only way to definitively diagnose that is a liver biopsy. I'm not aware of any lab tests that are definitive, and an ALT certainly is not definitive. And it, you know, it's interesting. I see, you know, I've been practicing a long time, 35 years now, and I see these trends. Copper storage disease is extremely rare. It's one of those things that, like, you know, I would probably see maybe two or three cases in my whole career, but I'm hearing this, you know, I'm hearing more and more people mention this copper, with the vet mentioned this, like, copper storage disease. It's like, there's these trends and fads, like, oh, this is the latest, you know, liver diagnosis. So, you know, I don't know what happens. Like, there's an article published in a journal, or they talk about it at some big CE meeting. And I mean, I don't know how this stuff gets started, but I see these trends. Like, we never used to talk about this. It was extremely rare, and it would be picked up, like, when you had a sick animal and you just couldn't figure out what's going on, and you keep digging, and then you end up doing something like a liver biopsy, which, in my opinion, is sort of not something we should be rushing into either. It's like, you know, if, like, we just, the pet's really sick and it's not getting better, then we need to kind of keep looking until we can figure out what's going on. But when a pet's perfectly healthy, acting perfectly normal, there's no way they can have serious liver disease. No way, because the liver's an essential organ, and a 500 ALT, I don't get excited about, because I've seen them in the thousands. Yeah. I've seen them up as high as 6,000. We get up to 4,000, 5,000, 6,000. Yeah. That's significant, but 500. Yeah. I'd be looking at supplements. Like you said, I mean, just the fact that the pet's on Simparica, that it just in and of itself could be elevating that ALT, because the liver is constantly having to detox the body, and then all of these vaccines and all that. And I agree totally with what you said, Dee Dee, that you start to micromanage one nutrient, you're going to be depriving that pet of a whole bunch of other nutrients. So you have to be really, really careful about doing that. And typically there's way healthier ways to do that, by, you know, to support liver function, herbs and things help the body, you know, or help the liver, detox more efficiently. It was actually a kitty that was diagnosed with a liver shunt. And I haven't gotten to see the actual, like, ultrasound report yet, but they had this little cat on KD, and, this person has multiple other cats that all eat raw. And she's like, all this cat wants is to eat the raw food. I said, let it eat the raw food. I said, because otherwise it's just going to be malnourished. And we're still kind of sorting this case out, but if the cat was like about 3.5, and I said, you know, most cats with, you know, with a liver shunt, a vascular shunt in the liver, by 3.5, they're not doing so well. And this cat looked fine. It was tiny, tiny little, only like 4.5 pounds, but otherwise, you know, looked pretty good. And we did draw some more labs to, you know, check in and see what the liver, you know, was doing currently. But, you know, you take a cat with compromised liver function, you know, presuming that the diagnosis was correct of the shunt, and then you deprive them of any species appropriate protein, which is what happens when you feed a food like KD, because not only is it super low in protein, but the protein that's in there is mostly plant-based. The poor thing's going to be malnourished in a year. You know, you don't stand a chance of helping that cat stay healthy, but they focus on one thing. Oh, it's got this. We got to do a low protein diet. And KD is typically for kidney stuff, but they put it on it thinking it would help the liver not have to work as hard. But when you're giving all these plant-based ingredients that especially a cat that's an obligate carnivore is not meant to be digesting and assimilating, their body is just not equipped to do it. You're stressing the liver more by doing that, in my opinion. They are much better off on a species appropriate diet, raw diet, perfectly fine. And then we do other things to help support the liver. You have to start with the balanced species appropriate diet and then add in other things to support whatever condition is going on. You start micromanaging nutrients and you're just going to end up in a whole bunch of trouble.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we really have to look at what does copper do for your pet? Why do we need copper? Why does your pet need copper? And some of the reasons that you need copper is the formation of red blood cells. Red blood cells carry oxygen and nutrients to the main body organs, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the important benefits of copper in dogs. Copper also is an antioxidant that stops free radicals, that causes aging. It does so many things. So I can't imagine that you want to take out all this copper. Now, I would say, all right, let's look at how safe is your water? You know, right. Can we test the water and see if the water is contaminated? But certainly, the biggest red flags that I'm seeing, Dr. JC, number one is that Simparica. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, Simparica, lots of information about dogs having major seizures on this particular drug, Bravecto, NexGard, Simparica. And that's the Simparica trio, right? Let's put it all in there for the dogs. Yeah. Should
one
we?
One stop shopping. Sure.
Woo. So Dogs Naturally actually has a video, it says, of a dog who is having a really long seizure after taking Simparica.
And well, they're neurotoxins. All of those flea and tick products, they're neurotoxins. That's how they kill the insects. So you're giving your pet a neurotoxin. So it's not a very big stretch for me to think that these would cause seizures.
Right. And that dog in that video did die a few months later because of those seizures. But many vets, you know, are saying, look, these just are not safe. So if it was you, Dr. Jasek, what would be the avenue that you would take with this particular dog? Would you pull him off all supplements and then say, you know, we got to stop giving this Simparica?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much when I see a case like that, you know, we have this kind of, you know, slight to moderate elevation in ALT and the dog's perfectly healthy. Yeah. I take him off of anything that isn't like medically necessary. I mean, some things you can't just drop them off of, but anything like that, and even any supplements, because you just don't know. All pets are different, and it could be just some you know, supplement that you would think is quote unquote healthy, but you just don't know it, you know, how a certain dog is going to, you know, react to some ingredients. And there could be lots of hidden ingredients in these supplements that, you know, there's not complete truth in labeling. So you see ingredients like natural flavors. You have no idea what that is. That could be some, there could be 10 things in there under that category. You have no idea what that is. So that's why we talk about, you have to feed whole food ingredients where you recognize, you know exactly what you're feeding. Like, you know, you look at a raw blend, it's meat, bone, and organs. I mean, we know what all that stuff is. There's no, what do you need to flavor, you know, real food for anyway? Like, you don't need it. So yeah. So I would stop all of those things and then recheck them and just see where, and then see where we're at. I might do a little liver support, like some help the liver detox, because if it is the supplements that are causing this to go up, that means the liver is working in overdrive to process these, you know, chemicals really. And so I might do a little extra, you know, detox support to help. And, you know, we have a little detox tea that we make up here. That's turmeric and milk thistle and dandelion. You know, people can, there's, you know, other companies that make, I think Adore Beast has a liver detox. Mm-hmm. You know, you can pick up this stuff. It's not hard to do. Just do a little bit of extra liver support. And then, you know, we wait. You probably got to wait, I would say, at least 3 weeks or so, and then check the enzyme again and see what's happening before I get excited about doing anything else. You know, I see, you know, so many people end up, you know, they get panicked because they get this scary diagnosis and then they're spending thousands of dollars on diagnostics that may not be even necessary. And like you said, most conventional vets don't even look at the supplement issue. But yeah, that would be the first thing I would do, and then recheck it. If it's still up, then, you know, we have herbs that, you know, that can help. There's lots of things we can do to help support normal liver function. But, you know, these, you know, zebra diagnoses, like, you know, the old saying, if you hear hoof beats, you know, don't look for the zebra, you know, right. Probably a horse. Expect a zebra, you know, that type of thing. Don't look for the unusual. I don't know why vets do this, but you just see this more and more. They throw out these really complicated diagnoses and unusual diagnoses. And most people don't know anything about them. And so they believe the vet because they don't know any different. But this is where, you know, you need to use some common sense. If your pet is acting perfectly normal and acting healthy and eating good and has normal poops and not vomiting, it doesn't have a serious liver condition. I can guarantee it, because if their liver is really, truly compromised, there's going to be symptoms.
You know, I just don't know how this leap to taking the copper, though, came from this information. And like you said, maybe it's just a narrative that's out there. But, you know, the one thing that does concern me, first of all, I would say get off the Simparica, right? Don't do
absolutely.
That. Kin and Kind is a better, you know, there are a lot of natural things that you could do. Also, in her information, she said that our lepto expires in August of 2022. And I would say, please do not do the lepto. You know, Dr. Patricia Jordan, we've talked about her. She said, look, if your dog is vaccinated for lepto, the antigens in the vaccines do the same harm to the immune system as possibly a natural infection. And there have been cases of dogs having to go through dialysis to save them. And no leptospirea were found. But the reason was, it was the damage from the antigens in the vaccinations that caused this, you know, problem that they had to get dialysis. So there's so much information out there. Well, in the areas that we look, okay, maybe not in the areas that, you know, people are searching for, but this lepto vaccine is not a safe vaccine. Mm-hmm. And they are saying that the damage from this vaccination, it is going to hurt your dog's immune system. It has an association of the risk of cancer because of the chemicals that are in the vaccine. So, you know, dogs are developing allergies, asthma, they can have anaphylactic shock and even die. So why are we doing this? And I think, again, Dr. Jasek, that there's this concept in pet parents' minds that if we do all of these vaccines, we put them on all of these, you know, chewables and everything, then my dog's going to be totally protected. And what we have to really get through to our pet parents is that these are chemicals.
Right.
And they have repercussions.
Right. And the vaccines, I think, you know, something to think about, you know, they're sold because you give this vaccine. And yeah, it's exactly like what you say. It's all this fear. There's all these horrible diseases out there waiting to just jump out and get your pet. And if you get all these shots and do all these preventatives, then it's going to be like a magic, you know, bubble around your pet, and it's never going to get sick. But when we inject so many unnatural substances, like, you know, you take the lepto. I couldn't even tell you when I would have given the last lepto vaccine, because I intentionally quit doing it many, many years ago because I saw such a high reaction rate to it. And I think overall anymore, vaccines do, you know, way more harm than good. But the thing to think about in a vaccine is they're taking that organism and they're modifying it. So, and then it's injected. So it's not going in the body in a natural form. And I think the reason it causes so many problems is the immune system just doesn't know what to do with it. You know, natural exposure lepto is spread in the urine. So ingesting urine from an animal that has lepto is how a dog would get it. And if you just think about that logically, how likely is that really? Like, they're not in the yard drinking squirrel pee. Yeah, I've heard that, or rabbit pee, you know, and they don't get it from poop. You know, it comes from the urine because it infects the kidneys, and even dogs that are out in the wild, out in the water. So say a deer, you know, pees, or, you know, they're near a beaver pond. Well, an animal is like peeing in the water. It's immediately diluted. So, I mean, what are the odds of them getting a big enough dose of that organism to make them sick? I think it's really, really slim if the animal is otherwise healthy. And that's why, you know, we talk about keeping them on the good diet, keeping their immune system strong. They're probably way better off facing a natural infection, natural route of exposure. They have a healthy immune system. Their body most likely is going to be able to handle it. And if they do get sick, lepto is treatable. You know, you can kill it with antibiotics. So if they do get diagnosed with it, they can treat it and then they're done. And then they have a healthy immunity. But once these vaccines set off these inflammatory reactions in the body and autoimmune disease, they just screw up the immune system. That's why we see so many itchy dogs, nice young itchy dogs. You know, they come in a year of age scratching like crazy. You know, it's because of all those, you know, the vaccines they get when they're young. The body just can't process all of these chemicals, and it tries to detox, but then the inflammation will show up somewhere. And every pet's different. There's sort of a weak link. Some dogs, it might show up in the skin, maybe in the gut, maybe in the liver. You know, the inflammation is going to show up there. So anytime you give a vaccine, I think you're running the risk of perpetuating this chronic inflammatory process. So yeah, if this dog with the elevated liver enzymes gets any kind of vaccine, and especially something like lepto, I'd almost bet that it's going to, you know, drive up those liver enzymes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Maeve, if you're listening, and I know you are, get in touch with Dr. Judy Jasek. Go over to ahavet.com, get a second opinion, work with her, before you do anything else. And this dog's only 5. Come on, we got to get this dog back in shape.
Oh yeah. Piece of cake.
Piece of cake.
We can do that.
You can. Absolutely. All right. So here is our next question. This is from Rachel. We are new to the raw feeding world with our new puppy, and I really love your website with all of your resources. I've been listening to your podcast for about a month now as well. Thank you for all of the information. Our puppy is now 15 weeks. We got her at 8 weeks. She's a black lab. We've noticed that she smells like cat pee, depending on what blends we feed her. Now, let me just say this. They're feeding a different raw dog food. So I don't know what's in that dog food, but she said they do feed her salmon, organ meats with tripe and kidney. So I hope there's animal protein in there somewhere. But she read that this could be because the cat pee smell. She read this, and Dr. Jasek, in all my years, I've never read this. So I'm going to run it by you. She said she read that this cat pee smell could be because she's getting too many omegas and she could be secreting them through her skin and they get rancid. And so she asked me, have you come across this? I will have to say, no, I don't. I haven't. And she said, do you have any recommendations to prevent this pee smell? Could it be a more serious health concern? They live in Connecticut. There are no holistic vets there, which is why they could Zoom with you, Dr. Jasek. Mm-hmm. But she said there are no holistic vets there in Connecticut within a few hours of them. And our current vet is not supportive of the raw diet. Okay, Rachel, I got some, get a new vet. That's my advice for you. Get a new vet. So anyway, this is something that she wanted to know why. Oh, and she did clarify they don't have a cat.
There's not a cat peeing on the dog.
There's no cat peeing on the dog. So anyway.
Oh my goodness.
Thoughts?
Yeah, never heard that one before. My first thought is, you know, what a dog smells like, that's a little bit subject to interpretation too. What smells like cat pee to one person might not smell like cat pee to, another person. I find that, and this is where I would definitely dig into exactly what they're feeding, because I find that dogs that eat raw have less odor. Like they just have kind of a pleasant, you know, fur and skin odor, like nothing objectionable. To me, cat pee is very objectionable. That stinks. Cat pee really stinks. And I find that dogs eating raw, a clean raw diet, typically don't have much odor. It actually is better. I mean, it's one of the things that people tell me, like they get their dogs on raw and they're not as stinky because they're not as inflamed and their skin isn't as inflamed and damp and yeasty and all that from eating other food. So yeah, I would be digging into what else this dog might be on. I've never ever heard that omegas can be excreted through the skin and become rancid. It doesn't even really make sense to me, because if they're eating them, they're going to be broken down in the digestive tract. And by the time they get, they have to be broken down in the digestive tract and then absorbed into the bloodstream and then get out to the skin. But then they're going to be just in these little itty bitty molecules, like nothing really that could go rancid there. So that doesn't make any sense at all to me. And I would be digging into maybe what else is this dog eating? Are they putting anything on the dog? Insect repellent or, you know, even like some natural things, you know, sometimes like I found this on my own skin, like some essential oils, like kind of combine with my skin and then they'll smell kind of funky. Like they smell them in the bottle and you put them on your body, like, oh, it smells different because they're combining with your chemistry. So if they were adding anything topically to the dog, I'd be looking at all of those things, but I just don't believe that it's the raw food. Or maybe there's something else in the raw food. Again, as we've talked about, if there's a bunch of synthetic supplements in the food that they're feeding, you know, who knows what that's breaking down to in the body.
Well, you know what I'd be taking a look at? Look at those anal glands. Are they impacted? Mm. You know, when the anal glands get impacted, they stinky. And yeah. And you don't know, because it's like, you know, and so the question would be, are they feeding enough bone, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can push out some harder poops. Because I wasn't sure in the raw food, the bone source, you know, if they were doing enough bone. But those anal glands, when they get full, they have a real fishy metal smell to them. So I'm wondering if that is an issue.
Yeah, that's actually a really good thought. I hadn't thought about that. And also, you know, finding out, have the stools been real formed? Because even, you know, if stools might be formed, but even a little bit soft, then they're not going to be pushing those anal glands out clean. You know, the moral of the story is be sure to check the sphincter.
Oh, I love it. You got the word in. What up with the sphincter? Good job. All right. So, Rachel, let us know how your dog's sphincter is doing on that. All right. Last question for today, Dr. Jasek. One of my customers lives out in an area in California where there's a lot of sand. And he took his dog to the lake out there. It wasn't the ocean, it was a lake. And the dog rolled in the sand. And then he got one of his dogs got these sores underneath the armpits. So I said, and the dog was itching. Now, here's another kind of thing about sand. One of our employees has a sandbox at her house. And her German Shepherd likes to roll in that sandbox. And her German Shepherd is the only dog that itches all the time. So I started looking at sand and I started saying, well, sand can definitely dry out your dog's skin. I don't know if there could be little, you know, mites or creatures in the sand, but this particular customer out in California said, you know, my dog's itching. And I said, well, it could be that there's, you know, you need to give your dog a bath or whatever. But I was asking about the little sores underneath the armpits. And I said, well, could it be that they got sand under there and they were running and then that just kind of, you know, caused a sore because one dog had sores under the armpit pits and one didn't. Any thoughts on sand? Dogs and sand.
You mean, I would think, you know, for the most part, it should be pretty benign. I mean, I would think most of it would like fall out of the fur once they got up and got moving around, but the mites, or flies, you know, little no-see-ums, ants, things like that could definitely be in there. So, you know, they'd want to be kind of, you know, checking for that, or maybe do like a natural insect repellent, an essential oil kind of repellent, and just see if that helps. But, you know, sand, you know, unless it, like you said, it got into a certain area and caused a rub sore, but I think most of the time it would just kind of fall off of the dog and should be pretty inert. You know, I mean, there shouldn't be much in it that's causing a problem. So I would think if there's something directly related to the dog being in the sand, I'd be thinking maybe bugs and doing something to, you know, try to mitigate that.
And keep them out of the sand for a while and see if it changes.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Make sure that it is actually the sand. Yeah. That would be the first step.
Yeah. And we suggested that he put aloe. He wanted some Restore and he wanted it overnighted. I said, that's going to cost you an arm and a leg. So get some aloe and get that in there. And on your next order, then, you know, order some Restore and you can put it on those wounds because they were already starting to dry out.
Another great thing for just, you know, like sudden itchy skin is a nettles tincture. Nettles is like a natural antihistamine and should be widely available to most people. You can go to like any natural grocery store and get that. And it's a natural antihistamine. So if your dog, you know, this time of year, and then they get bug bites and, you know, get into the weeds and, you know, something flares up their skin. But some nettles will help stop some of that irritation. You know, dogs, you know, once their skin gets irritated, if they just leave it alone, I think a lot of the time it would heal, but they get after it. They start licking it and then it's more irritated and they keep licking it or they keep scratching it and they sort of perpetuate it. So if you could get, you know, some things on the aloe is great too. That's very soothing. Just make sure there's no other chemicals in it. That's a good clean product. That's very, very soothing for the skin. And then something internally like a nettles could help just kind of calm some of these things down and maybe get the dog to leave it alone so that it can heal.
Nice. Nice. So it's just, you just put it directly in the dog's mouth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You can just get like a tincture and I actually, for singular herbal tinctures like this, I really like the human products because pet products tend to have all kinds of crap in, like, you know, not all of them, not like the brands you carry, like Four Leaf Rover and Adored Beast, but a lot of the, you know, go to PetSmart and you get some anti-itch thing. Well, it's just going to have a bunch of chemicals and stuff that you don't want to give. So if you're getting a singular like herbal supplement like the nettles, go to like a natural grocery store, get a human dose and just kind of, it's very, very safe. So you can just extrapolate the dose, like a 50-pound dog, 50 to 70-pound dog would get like, you know, half of a human dose. You have a 25-pound dog, you know, a quarter of a human dose or something like that. You can just sort of extrapolate it down. They're you know, something like that is very safe. You're not going to hurt your dog.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, everybody, that is our podcast for today. Make sure that you check out Dr. Judy Jasek's website. You can work with her via Zoom. If you're here in Colorado, you can go see her. You can even travel into this state and see her. And so that is at ahavet.com. Great articles on our website as well that can help you with all things in the pet health world. Holistically, homeopathically, I don't know. It's all clean, right? So Let's get a second opinion. I always say get a second opinion because Dr. Jasek is going to look at things very different than the traditional veterinary world. All right. Get your dog on a species appropriate diet. There's nothing like getting a clean diet going. All right. That is our basis. We got to get a clean diet. There are great, great products here at Raw Dog Food and Company. If you get confused, just hit the I'm confused button and we will help you. But really, it doesn't matter where you start, doesn't matter what breed you have, doesn't matter what age. This is all clean, species appropriate food. Because here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business. And friends, don't let friends feed kibble. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.